My talk will be about bicorrections in cosmological perturbation theory, and is based on work I've done together with Bianca Dittrich for Perimeter in these two papers over there. Okay, this is the overview of my talk. First, I want to talk a little bit about the standard treatment of cosmological perturbation theory, which is mainly due to Pantenberger, Feldman, and Mukhano, and especially which works perfectly well, the whole treatment to linear order, but there are certain problems which one runs into if one tries to generalize the whole treatment to higher than linear order. And I will name these problems, and then I will introduce the new Hamiltonian framework, which Bianca already talked about, and I will try to show you how one can overcome at least some of these problems. Especially the problem of backreaction effects can be talked about in this formalism. And I will illustrate how this works using a Bianchi 1 cosmological model, which is in isotropic by Tom Jennings, before coming to my conclusions. Okay. The standard theory of cosmological perturbation theory, cosmological perturbations, a nice overview can be found in this reference over there. If you start with an homogeneous and isotropic universe, a universe which is entirely homogeneous and isotropic, then the most general solution you can write down is the Friedmann-Rodolphus-Walker solution, which for vanishing spatial curvature can be written down in the following form, where A is the scale factor, and I've written down it in conformal time. If you just put this solution, this ansatz, into the Einsteinic field equations, then at your desired matter source, which can be written in this case as a diagonal tensor, where rho is the density of the universe and P is the pressure, then you arrive at the Friedmann equations, which are a system of differential equations for an entirely homogeneous and isotropic universe. And but the question is, our universe is not homogeneous and isotropic, so how do we deal with an inhomogeneous and isotropic universe? At least in cases where the degree of inhomogeneity and anisotropy is not too huge, one can surely do perturbation theory. How does one this? You start with a metric G mu nu, and you just divide the metric into two parts, into a Friedmann-Robertson-Walker part, which is the first one, which is fixed, and into perturbations. Okay, you just split the metric into a fixed Friedmann-Robertson-Walker part and into perturbations, and because this delta G mu nu, the perturbations, is an anti-symmetric tensor, it has 10 components. And if you do cosmological perturbation theory, then you usually characterize these 10 entries of the delta G mu nu according to their behavior under SO3, under the rotation group. So there will be 4 scalar modes, 4 vector modes, and 2 tensor modes. But the big question is, what are the physical, that means gauge-independent degrees of freedom of this split? And surely this question cannot be answered in full general relativity so far, but at least in perturbation theory, one can try to find an answer to that question. For instance, if you consider just linear perturbation theory, where perturbation theory means the absolute value of delta G mu nu must be much smaller than the entries of the Friedmann-Robertson-Walker metric, and then these 10 components of delta G mu nu are not the true physical degrees of freedom. As we all know, gravity has 2 independent degrees of freedom, which one can just count, for instance, by counting the constraints of general relativity. And the question is how to find the physical degrees of freedom, at least in linear perturbation theory. And to linear order, one can use the following facts. First, in linear order, the different modes of the gravitational field, the scalar modes, the vector modes, and the tensor modes, they do not couple. So furthermore, one can show that we can concentrate on the scalar modes, because these are the modes in linear perturbation theory which couple to the matter degrees of freedom. The tensor modes do not couple to the matter degrees of freedom in linear order, and the vector modes, one can show that these decay exponentially in an accelerating universe. So the question is now, what are the gauge invariant modes? And in linear perturbation theory, one can indeed find a gauge invariant combinations of these two, of these 4 scalar modes. These are known as the Bardeen potentials, and the Bardeen potentials are invariant under small gauge transformations, where small gauge transformations mean, if you would translate this into a canonical language, that these quantities would Poisson commute with the linearized constraints. If you prefer to work with the gauge fixing, then you can do that as well. You can consistently set 2 of these scalar modes to 0, which will result in the so-called longitudinal gauge. So just take these Bardeen potentials and your preferred choice of matter, which might, for instance, be a scalar field if you're interested in inflationary cosmology, invert this into the Einstein field equations and keep only terms which are linear in the fluctuations. So this will result in a system of differential equations for the gravitational fluctuations and for the matter fluctuations, and these system of differential equations describe the dynamic evolution of matter and gravitational perturbations on a Friedmann-Robertson-Walker background to linear order. And it turns out that this linear perturbation theory in cosmology is the most important tool if you want to study physics of the very early universe, because just take your preferred theory of the very early universe, calculate what kind of predictions this theory makes for the distribution of density fluctuations just very short after the Big Bang, use the theory of cosmological perturbations and evolve this density distribution until 300,000 years after the Big Bang, then you can compare this behavior with the cosmological microwave background. But the whole thing gets a little bit complicated if you try to generalize the theory to higher order, so beyond linear order, and the problems are the following. The first problem is that the modes, the scalar modes, tensor modes, and vector modes, they do not decouple anymore beyond linear order, so it's very problematic to extract the gauge invariant observables already to second order, which means that it is very hard to distinguish between physical perturbations on the one hand side and mere gauge artifacts on the other hand side. So if you don't know the analogous quantities to the Bardeen potentials, then you can never be sure if you start with a certain density distribution of fluctuations and evolve it in time, you can never be sure that what you calculate is not just fluctuations in the gauge directions at the end. So one cannot trust the dynamic evolution if one doesn't know what the gauge invariant degrees of freedom are. The second problem is that there are back reaction effects. That means that the split into background and into fluctuations gets ambiguous beyond linear order. So the background dynamics get influenced by perturbations starting at second order. That means that Friedmann-Robertson-Walker is only a zeroth order approximation to the true physical behavior of homogeneous and isotropic variables. And the third point is that the calculations get very messy starting with second order, but I guess that might be the point in all perturbation theories to higher orders. So now let me propose, let me talk about the new Hamiltonian framework, which Bianca already mentioned, and I think that one can overcome at least some of these problems in this framework. First, as Bianca already mentioned, this framework is based on relational observables, and because it's based on relational observables of full general relativity, that means we do not start with a fixed Friedmann-Robertson-Walker background and then with perturbations on it try to find the gauge invariant combinations. But we start with observables of full general relativity, and even if these are only known at a formal level, we can try to approximate these observables around a certain symmetry root sector of the theory, being the homogeneous and anisotropic fields. So, because we don't have external coordinates, but of course there is a notion of something as a coordinate in the theory, but the coordinates are not put in from the exterior by hand, but they will emerge in a purely dynamical way, meaning that we will use physical fields to define what space and time actually are. So because we don't have an external background, but you can define what is known as a Friedmann-Robertson-Walker background by using a certain averaging procedure over dynamical degrees of freedom on the three hypersurface. And because we define the background in that way, the background as the symmetry reduced sector of homogeneous and isotropic functions, space-based functions, the background will stay entirely dynamical, which is important for consistency if you want to define perturbation theory beyond linear order. In a canonical language, that means that the Poisson brackets in the background sector do not vanish. And furthermore, we can use something like a Feynman-like interpretation in terms of free propagation and interaction terms, where the free propagation is given by the linear evolution of perturbations on a Friedmann-Robertson-Walker background, or the evolution of homogeneous and isotropic quantities just with respect to Friedmann-Robertson-Walker. And the interaction terms are a coupling between different modes. We'll come to that in more detail on the next slide. Starting from the complete observable, which Bianca already mentioned in her talk, she used the notation small f of tau. This is a complete observable, and it is relational observables of full general relativity. And these observables are Dirac observables in the sense that they weakly commute with all the constraints of general relativity. And it's important to mention that in this observable, which can be written down as an infinite series in that the clock functions tk play an essential role in this observable, and they will basically define what the coordinate system is, but in a completely physical way. For instance, you could just use scalar fields on the free manifold and define the coordinate system on the free manifold by just say which what is the value of the scalar field at that point. So starting from these observables, we can just do what Bianca introduced in her talk in more general. We can split the phase space of general relativity into a homogeneous and isotropic sector and into everything else. This can be done by using a projection operator acting on all the phase space functions. And this projection operator can be defined in a canonical basis. In the case of cosmology, where the symmetry reduced sector is just homogeneous and isotropic fields, the projection operator is just given by the integral over the free manifold and the trace over the tensorial variables. And if we choose to work with Ashtikas variables, then the connection A can be split into two parts. The first one being the capital A, where beta is the immersive parameter and just the Kronecker delta. And this is just the part which comes out of the connection if you just let the projection operator act on the connection. And this is these are the variables of purely Friedmann-Robertson-Walker dynamics. And into everything else, which is the fluctuations, which occur in this framework as the identity minus the projection operator acting on the connection. Just do the same thing for the conjugate momentum E. And then, if you, as Bianca already mentioned, call the background variables or the homogeneous and isotropic variables capital A and capital E, call these zeros order variables, and call the rest first order variables in this canonical basis, then you would see, if you calculate the symplectic structure in these variables, that the symplectic structure in the background variables is non-vanishing, which is very important for consistency, as you will see on the next slide. And the symplectic structure in the fluctuations or in the first order variables is degenerate, but this can be dealt with. In the split of the canonical basis into the complete observable F, which must be written in this canonical basis before, and then sorted by powers of fluctuation, and you will see that this is that you get an approximate Dirac observable in the sense that it commutes with all constraints up to terms which are of order n plus 1 in the fluctuations. So, using these concepts, one can, for instance, just regain all the results of linear cosmological perturbation theory, just calculate the first order approximations to the complete observables for a first order quantity, and then you can get all the results of linear perturbation theory. But what is more interesting, I'm a little bit short on time, is the back reaction effects. And the back reaction effects is just the following. Consider a zeroth order variable in this formalism, which is just a homogeneous and isotropic variable. And if you calculate the zeroth order approximation of the complete observable for this variable, then you just regain the usual Friedmann-Robertson-Walker dynamics for this variable. But if you calculate the second order approximation to this variable, then you get a certain correction terms, and these correction terms are just given by the free evolution of this quantity F, which is just the Friedmann-Robertson-Walker dynamics, plus the correction term, which is given by the free evolution of this quantity, and then the Poisson bracket with a certain part of the constraint, which is quadratic in the fluctuations. And this Poisson bracket does not vanish just because the Poisson structure of the background is non-vanishing. And then you just have this Poisson bracket will be a product of the zeroth order variables and two first order variables, and then evolve these variables just according to the linear theory, and then this is the second order approximation. Plus there are certain terms which are the gauge invariant extension of these things. And let me illustrate this on a small example, namely the Bianchi 1 model, which is a anisotropic but homogeneous cosmological model where the connection A is just given by the diagonal matrix A1, A2, A3, the same for the E field E, and there's a homogeneous scalar field, a homogeneous canonical momentum to the scalar field, and the Hamiltonian constraint takes the following form. What you can do now is treat the Bianchi 1 model as perturbations, as n isotropic perturbations around Friedmann, Roberts, and Walker universes. So you define capital A as the average value over all the AIs, and the same for E, and you just define small a as n isotropic fluctuations around this average value. Then consider the complete observable associated to E to the clock T equals phi over pi, and the Bianchi 1 model has a big advantage that you can solve it exactly. So first solve it exactly, then using our formalism, just describe the zeroth order solution, calculate the second order solution, and you can print the whole thing, and it will look as follows. Just for certain choices of initial data, you see that this is basically just the time evolution of E, where time is measured in pi over pi. So the green one is the exact solution, the blue one is the zeroth order approximation, which you would obtain just in the Friedmann-Robertson-Walker case, and the red one is the second order approximation. And you will see that Friedmann-Robertson-Walker is not a very good approximation to the true dynamical behavior, even for homogeneous and isotropic variables, as written down in this case, for all times. So the question is, this is only the Bianchi 1 model, and it's much too simple to draw any physical conclusions, but it would be very interesting to look at a physically more realistic model to answer the question if back reaction effects have the ability to alter the dynamical behavior of homogeneous and isotropic universes. So that one could, for instance, think of explaining things like dark energy or something with that. So my conclusions are the following. I showed you that in this framework, one can do cosmological perturbation theory a little bit different than usual, because this framework is based on relational observables of full general relativity and not on approximating certain things around a certain background which is given a priori. So the issue of gauge invariance can be kept under control more easily. Furthermore, there is no fixed background structure required, but the background just emerges as through an averaging procedure with a projection operator over dynamic degrees of freedom on the three manifold, and therefore the background stays entirely dynamical, which is consistent for perturbation theory to higher order. Furthermore, we can calculate back reaction effects in this formalism. It was just I illustrated how this works using the Bianchi model. The Bianchi model is much too simple to draw any physical conclusions, but it would be very interesting to consider a physically more realistic model to be able to say if we can say something about the claim which is sometimes made in the literature, if back reaction effects in cosmology have to say something about dark energy or not. Thank you.
You seem to have several factors going on here, so I'd like to understand by sorting it out one by one. I'm trying to show that relational variables can actually do a better job compared to what everybody else does. So this first part. Second part, what you do said.
I think the most important claim about the relational framework is that because you start with the observables of full general relativity, and these complete observables are Dirac observables of full general relativity. Therefore, and because we do not start with a fixed Friedmann-Robertson-Walker background and then put certain perturbations on that, so and then you run into certain problems if you generalize the whole thing to higher orders. What are the true physical degrees of freedom? Because it's somehow hard to see what in perturbation theory. And using this approach, you can easily see what are the physical degrees of freedom because you work on a manifestly gauge invariant level all the time.
Yeah, I can understand the gauge invariant, but also if you use related variables, you also can show under what circumstances the figure of the local universe relates to that.
Yeah, somehow that's.
So I can see the imagine, except for the very first step that you can use the figure of the local world, whatever that would be on any type with a relational variable, and then with that you can construct
So the interesting part is that that if you believe in general relativity, then there should not be something like a fixed coordinate system, like that there should not be Robertson-Walker-Friedman or something. And if you can show that Friedman-Robertson-Walker emerges through some averaging procedure, and that using this averaging procedure, Friedman-Robertson-Walker will get certain corrections after at a certain order. So I think this is the message.
One more question. In your previous slide, you had the plot there with the exact solution.
Yep.
And where is that exact solution coming from?
Where is that coming from?
I mean, that's not like from perturbation theory.
No, this is just the exact solution of the Bianchi 1 model. You can just take the Bianchi 1 model and just calculate the exact observable associated to this average value of E, and then this is just exact.
Without perturbation.
Yeah, this is without perturbation.
And the blue is just the isotropic.
Yeah, it's just the exact solution within the Bianchi 1 model. And the other two are, so the blue one is a Friedman-Robertson-Walker solution, and the red one is the second order approximation in this formalism.
And then quickly, why do Bianchi 1? Why not just do FRW? Because most cosmologists will do FRW.
No, let's just
say... second order would be... something that would be very interesting.
Yeah. No, so the main purpose of considering the Bianchi 1 model was just because I wanted to show that one can calculate back correction effects using this method, and that back correction effects are true physical effects, that it's not gauge effects, but it's true physical effects, the back correction effect. And the Bianchi 1 model was just easy to calculate because it's not a field theoretic model, because it's just n isotropic fluctuations, but not in homogeneous fluctuations. So it was just for calculation purposes.